Next case to be heard, number 2008-2462, Church of God in Northern Ohio, Inc. versus Richard Levin, Tax Commissioner. I'll let you pour your water, and then, Mr. Kendi, if you'd present the argument.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is David Kennedy. I'm here on behalf of the Church of God in Northern Ohio. I wish to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Please watch your time.
Thank you. The sole question presented for review today is whether the Board of Tax Appeals reasonably and lawfully concluded that the Church of God's property should be denied exemption from real estate taxation under Revised Code 570912. While the facts are largely undisputed, it is our position that the board made 3 fundamental legal errors. First, it concluded erroneously that administrative functions cannot fulfill a charitable purpose. Secondly, it mistakenly equates administrative and corporate functions with profit-making activities. And thirdly, it improperly applied a different standard to the Church of God than it has to other non-religious charitable institutions. I'd like to address each in turn. First, the board concluded erroneously that administrative functions cannot fulfill a charitable purpose. This court has repeatedly recognized that administrative offices for charitable institutions are fulfilling a charitable purpose and are therefore exempt from real estate taxes. I would cite the Girl Scout case, Case Western Reserve, and Community Health Professionals as all directly on point. All 3 of these cases, the focus of the court's inquiry was not whether administrative functions were being performed, but rather whether any portion of the property was being used with a view towards profit. The Church of God should be evaluated under the same standard. The board's decision creates a false dichotomy between administrative functions and charitable purposes, one that has never before been used by this court as a grounds to deny exemption. Secondly, the board mistakenly equated administrative and corporate functions with profit-making activities. For its conclusion, the board cites the Church of God's Articles of Incorporation, which included reserve powers to acquire assets, borrow money, loan money, or guarantee indebtedness. Yet this fact alone does not disqualify the church from exemption. The unstated inference in the board's decision is that the Church of God is conducting some sort of commercial or profit-making activity, such as operating a commercial bank or a mortgage lending office. Yet there is simply no evidence in the record to support that conclusion. The powers reserved in the articles are inherently neither commercial nor charitable. Rather, they simply provide the authority for the corporation to legally operate to further its purpose. So the focus should not be under what authority the board reserved, but rather on how the authority is being used. In other words, does it exercise the authority in fulfilling its charitable purpose? And here's where the board erred by assuming facts not in evidence, because the only evidence in the record supports the conclusion that every portion of this building is being used primarily in furtherance of its charitable purposes of promoting the cause of Christian religion. And I'm quoting from paragraph 1 of its Articles of Incorporation. Pastors and ministry leaders are trained, educated, and credentialed. Missionary and evangelistic programs are developed, planned, and implemented. Christian education programs for children and youth are developed and produced. Ministry training seminars are regularly conducted on the premises. Recordings of these programs and seminars are copied and distributed free of charge. Community outreach programs, such as the Backpack to School program, are coordinated and organized and implemented. Strategic plans for new churches and missionary sites are made. And the bishop, his board, and the staff provide for the spiritual well-being, growth, and oversight of the pastors and church members under their jurisdiction. None of these are commercial or profit-motivated activities. They're not in competition with any commercial enterprise. Rather, they are simply a good faith attempt to spiritually benefit mankind in general and those in need of spiritual advancement and benefit in particular, without any hope or expectation of gain or profit. And I'm quoting from paragraph one of the syllabus of the Planned Parenthood case. The state has long recognized that the property used primarily for a lawful advancement of religion is a charitable purpose. The Cleveland Bible College, American Community of Rabbinical College of Telshi, Planned Parenthood, and True Christianity have all spoken definitively on this issue.
Let me ask you a question about that, because isn't the real point of dispute, as I was looking at the briefs in this case, whether or not the activities that are being conducted on this property are primarily in support of the activities of the local church congregations? And doesn't that distinguish that from some of these other cases where the activity is to disseminate information generally? Doesn't that put this case more into the category of some of the cases which, as you point out, have usually been considered under the public worship exemption?
Well, we have applied not under the public worship exemption. We've applied under the charitable, used exclusively for charitable purposes exemption. So the cases interpreting 570907 are really not applicable here because we're applying under a different statute. Okay, we are saying that we meet every prong of the Highland Park test. It's owned by the institution, used exclusively for charitable purposes, and without a view towards profit. So, you know, our purpose is the same as our church's underneath us purpose, and that's to promote the Christian religion. But we are doing that in the building. I mean, we are about...
Well, if the... Let me ask you sort of a broader question. Yeah, there are, as you point out, more than one exemption in the law, and one of them is for houses of public worship, and another one is for charitable use of the property. Does your argument actually imply that the church itself is engaging in a charitable institution when it conducts public worship? And if so, then would there be any need for a public worship exemption? I mean, if church activity is itself charitable activity.
Our building, the building in question, mm-hmm. we're looking at the use of the building.
Right.
Our building is not a house of public worship. There's no sanctuary. There's no worship services. We're closed on Sunday. We're open 6 days a week, the rest of the week, doing what we do, having seminars and training pastors and so on and so forth. There is a need for the house of public worship exemption because, you know, churches, whether they're, you know, church or synagogue or mosque or temple or whatever, are entitled to exemption because they are open for public worship.
And a lot of the evidence showed, I thought, that the activity that was conducted on the property at issue is in support of what those houses of public worship are doing. Is that right, or am I wrong about that?
Yes, in a way, we are about supporting our 126 churches under our jurisdiction in doing their work. But what we're doing in and of ourselves in this building mm-hmm. is charitable. It's furthering the work of Christian, promoting the cause of Christian religion. It is about supporting and organizing and training and equipping the churches that are under their jurisdiction to do what they do, to have houses of public worship. But what we're doing is distinct. Does that make sense?
Please continue.
Thank you. The third error of the board is that the board improperly applied a different standard to the Church of God than it has to other non-religious institutions. Since the building in question is not a house of public worship, the Church of God properly sought exemption not under 570907, but rather under Revised Code 570912 as an institution using its property exclusively for charitable purposes. Ohio courts have long held that it is the use of the property, not the owner of the property, that is the determining factor for exemption. Moreover, the church's authority for applying under this statute comes directly from this court, where in the True Christianity case it stated, it recognized at page 120, religious institutions are not excluded from application under Revised Code 570912. There's no dispute that the appropriate standard for this exemption under this statute is set forth in the Highland Park case. Two requirements must be met. First must be that it's owned by the institution. Secondly, that it's used exclusively primarily for charitable purposes. Now, the case law and the statute and the case law interpreting it have added a third prong, and that's not used with a view towards profit. When the Girl Scouts applied for exemption under the same statute for the same size building and used for the same purposes, the tax commissioner correctly concluded that the 97% of the building that was used for administration and training was entitled to exemption. No questions asked. It's a charitable institution used for administrative purposes and training, it's exempt. Commissioner had a legitimate argument that the 3% of the building that housed the Girl Scout store may have been operated with a view towards profit and should be split listed. Yet the board's decision below is irreconcilable with the Girl Scout case. If evaluated under the same standard, there is nothing in the record to support any portion of the Church of God property being split listed. What we have is an impermissible double standard. The tax commissioner's position is that if you're a charitable institution, your administrative offices are exempt. If you're a religious institution, they're not. Yet the revised code does not permit such a double standard. In fact, the court in True Christianity stated that whether or not the institution is religious or charitable is not a relevant factor. The only relevant factor is the Highland Park test. And we're here, where the property is owned by the institution, used in good faith primarily in furtherance of an evangelistic purpose and for the preparation and dissemination of a religious message, and three, operated without a view towards profit, they should qualify for exemption under this statute. Since the board applied an improper standard that was not supported by any reliable or probative evidence in the record, the determination in this case was clearly unreasonable and unlawful, and I would respectfully pray that this court reverse and vacate the decision and find that the Church of God administrative offices are exempt from taxation under this statute.
Let me ask you, because I guess I'm coming back to the same point. You're relying heavily on the Girl Scout case, and I guess that the difference here, again, going back to our previous discussion, is a lot of the activity at this site is in support of the operation of the local congregations of the Church of God. And is that really the same as what the Girl Scouts is doing? I mean, the Girl Scouts is a very different kind of organization, isn't it?
Well, it's interesting. There's never been a proclamation by the Supreme Court that said that a good faith attempt to advance or promote the character development and leadership training of girls is a mm-hmm. charitable purpose. Mm-hmm. We don't have that. It was just assumed, well, the Girl Scouts are the Girl Scouts, they're charitable, they're a charitable purpose. We do have a statement, numerous statements by this court that say a good faith attempt to promote the cause of religion or education is a charitable purpose. So it's the purpose is more charitable than the Girl Scouts, but the Girl Scouts got a free pass.
Is there anything more you want to?
I will reserve the rest of my time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Rourke.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Ryan O'Rourke, appearing here on behalf of the tax commissioner. The appellant in this case, the Church of God in Northern Ohio, has asked this court to accept the unprecedented assertion that the administrative office building used to support the local churches qualifies for an exemption under 5709.12 as property used exclusively for charitable purposes. We would ask this court to reject that unprecedented assertion and affirm the Board of Tax Appeals. Now, 40 years ago, in the Planned Parenthood case, this court said that charity, in the legal sense, is the good faith attempt to advance and benefit mankind in general, or to advance and benefit those in need, a needy subset of mankind in general. As the BTA correctly found, the property here is not used primarily to advance and benefit mankind in general, or a needy subset of mankind. It's used to benefit its members. The BTA correctly stated that the primary purpose of the property is corporate and administrative oversight, such as employee training, secretarial support, treasury support, reinforcing their religious beliefs amongst their members, as opposed to reaching out to a broad-based swath of mankind in general.
But if the Herb Society or Planned Parenthood or one of these other organizations, I presumably also have some administrative activities that they conduct, presumably that would be within the scope of their exemption. It wouldn't be disqualified merely because they were, conducting the administrative activity. I mean, that's a necessary part of conducting their overall mission, isn't it?
No, I don't mean to suggest that an administrative office will never, ever not get a charitable exemption. Let me put forth a simple hypothetical, because in the appellant's brief, they suggest this parade of horribles where if the exemption is denied here, exemption will be denied to the Red Cross or the United Way. Let's assume we have a two-story building. On the first floor is a soup kitchen owned and operated by a church. There's no public worship that takes place in the soup kitchen. Second floor, there's an administrative office building. It procures the food, it procures the volunteers, it pays the utility bills, it sends out flyers to get people to come in to the soup kitchen. I think it's fair to say in that instance, the administrative office would be exempt and the soup kitchen would be exempt, because but for the administrative office, that soup kitchen wouldn't be able to get on the ground running. Now the appellant has also relied on the True Christianity evangelism case. We think that reliance is misplaced. In that case, the appellant was, in his own words, reaching out to encourage and badger anyone he could to live up to better moral standards, whether that included reading the Bible or the Quran. There was no component of encouraging them to engage in public worship. That's to be distinguished from the facts in this case, where what they're doing is reinforcing their belief system amongst their members. And I'm not disparaging that in any way, but our position is it's not charitable. They're not reaching out to the community. They're not having open houses. They're not disseminating a religious message to a needy subset of mankind or mankind in general. What they do, and if you look in Exhibit E2, if you drive onto the parking lot, it says private parking only, executive offices. So it would be tough if you were just someone driving along that you would feel open to come in and learn about what takes place on this property. So we think there's a critical distinction here.
Well, but it's possible that the Girl Scouts or any of these organizations might reserve parking spaces for the head of the organization.
Right, we're not saying that's a controlling factor.
Certainly there's some evidence that there's that evangelism is a part of what is going on at this site and in the congregations. And you're saying that you can distinguish that from true Christianity. And I'm interested in exactly what is that distinction?
Well, the distinction is the appellant in true Christianity had more of a global thinking outside, trying to reach out, as the court in its own, in the opinion said, reaching out to benefit mankind in general. What we have here is a building that is used to benefit its members primarily. We don't have hardly any instances of the public in general coming in to learn about the church, to receive religious materials. We have what's called the Call and Affirmation Ministry Study Program that's held. That is a licensing exam to become more fully integrated into the church. There's a background check that goes along with that, and there's also a fee you have to pay. There's a ministerial internship program. That's another element of becoming more fully integrated into the church. There's a licensing that goes along with it. You have to pay a fee. There is...
Grab some water.
There is a church treasurer's training program. This is to develop, to assist the administrators at the local churches to more effectively use software to manage their financial records. If you want to use this, you have to pay a fee. In these instances, I think it's evident that this is not the type of activity that is reaching out into the community or reaching out into benefit a needy subset of the community. It's reaching out to the pre-existing members, which is to be distinguished from true Christianity evangelism. And I want to pick up on a point that you brought up. It's an argument, a statutory construction argument, where we believe that if you grant an exemption here, it would tend to swallow up the 570907 exemption. Under their view, the property at issue here, which indirectly supports the local churches where the public worship occurs, would qualify under 5709.12 as property used exclusively for charitable purposes. Now, logically, if property which indirectly supports public worship qualifies under 5709.12, then the local churches themselves, which engage in the public worship, would also qualify under 5709.12. And what happens is you're rendering the 570907 House of Public Worship exemption meaningless. And that is in direct conflict with the rules of statutory construction, which this court has repeatedly stated that statutes should not be read to render one another meaningless or inoperative. They should be harmonized. And this principle was well as illustrated in the Rickenbacker case. In that case, there was a port authority, and it had sought exemption under the, there was an exemption that provided for property used for public purpose, or the 5709.121 exemption. But the court said, no, you can't proceed under those exemptions. You have to go under the exemption for port authorities. And that exemption said property belonging to port authorities, so long as there is not a lease on the property for more than 1 year, you can be exempt. And they, well aware of that, they proceeded under the public purpose exemption or the 121 exemption. And the court said, if we grant that exemption, it's going to render the limitations in the port authority exemption meaningless. And we think that that case has some merit and applicability to this case here.
There's a citation by your opponent to cases. There's the Telshi case, some of the cases involving, I guess, the seminaries. What's the commissioner's position on how those relate to this case?
Sure. The American Rabbinical College, it was a seminary. They had a curriculum. They had a faculty. They had a student body. And the syllabus law from that case said property exclusively used for the lawful advancement of education and religion is property used exclusively for charitable purposes. And I think it's important to focus that that is a conjunctive, education and religion. The appellant's not holding itself out as any sort of university or college. As it concedes throughout its brief, it's an administrative office building. Now, to be sure, they do have the occasional training programs, but it's nothing that would resemble the sort of activities that were occurring at the on the property of the American Rabbinical College. And there was also the point that you got into about supporting the local churches. We believe that there's a fair argument can be made that they're trying to seek a vicarious exemption through the activities that occur at the local churches, and this court has repeatedly rejected those types of attempts to seek exemption. The first case is the OCLC case, where we had a database that was assisting the libraries, and the database, the taxpayer said, we're charitable because we're assisting the libraries, and the court said, no, you cannot piggyback on the activities of the libraries. And a similar result was reached in the Hubbard Press case. There we had a not-for-profit publisher, a division of the Presbyterian Church of the United States, printed offering envelopes for its local churches. And what the court said there is printing offering envelopes is not an inherently charitable activity, and also said you're not allowed to seek a vicarious exemption through what the money used for the offering envelopes at the local churches. So we think that also has some applicability here, Your Honor.
You talked about focusing the activity at this site, focusing on persons who are already in some ways members. What if instead of being a particular denominational, associated with a particular denomination, similar activities were conducted in an ecumenical spirit? That would present a different case under your analysis or not?
Well, we think one of the critical factors that you can distill from these cases is whether or not you're making your property available to mankind in general or a needy subset of mankind in general. And if that's what that, under your hypo, is what they're doing, then I think that's a closer case. But that's certainly not what we have here. That's all we have, if you have no further questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Arora. Mr. Mr. Kennedy, you've reserved 2 minutes and 14 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. The tax commissioner has raised several points. First is only members benefit. Again, that's not the appropriate standard under 570912. The cases he's relying on that use that language, only members benefit, are these fraternal and professional association cases, okay? The Social Turnverein case, the Olmsted Falls case, Bethesda Healthcare case, Ohio Nurses Association. All those cases, the purpose of those entities was to serve as dues-paying members. We don't have dues-paying members, okay? Our purpose is external. The primary purpose of the Church of God is to disseminate a religious message to those who are not members of our organization. Their mission is to reach out to all mankind with the gospel message, to promote the cause of Christian religion. Secondly, counsel points to the American Rabbinical College case and says that it uses the term and. A year before that, there was a Supreme Court case, the Cleveland Bible College case, which says, and I quote, an institution used exclusively for the lawful advancement of education or of religion, or both, is an institution used exclusively for charitable purposes. So obviously the American community, or Committee of Rabbinical College of Telshi, Inc. was using the language from the prior year's case and changed it because of this different fact circumstances. But the Cleveland Bible College case is directly on point. Furthermore, the Cleveland Bible College case says it is not necessary that such an institution be open generally to the public in order to have tax exemption, which is what the commissioner is arguing. The fact that such an institution restricts admission to followers of a Christian or any other lawful religion is not will not prevent it from having tax exemption if the property is used exclusively for lawful, educational, or religious purposes. Thirdly,
but those purposes in those cases typically, or those activities that were going on, were more of a formal educational degree-granting kind of activity,
but we
weren't they?
About a lot of formal educational degree credentialing, training of pastors, 400 pastors, we're about that. That's what we're doing. Finally, the distinction about rendering 570907 meaningless, if you take our position, that's not true. You still have to meet the Highland Park test. You still have to be owned by the institution. A lot of churches are owned in the bishop's names. They lease the property. They wouldn't qualify under 570912.
But churches that were owned by the congregation itself would qualify as charitable?
Not necessarily. Again, you have to meet the second prong, which is that it's used exclusively for charitable purposes. If they have a bookstore, if they have if they're renting some space or leasing some facilities to a daycare center, whatever, they don't qualify.
Well, what if they're conducting worship services and then in the basement they have a soup kitchen?
Well, again,
would all of it qualify as charitable use?
I would think so, as long as it meets those three prongs. Okay. If it has a charitable purpose, it's used exclusively for that purpose, it's owned by the institution, and it's not operated with a view towards profit, it would qualify. But what I'm saying is 570907 is not rendered meaningless because your house of public worship is still needed for houses of public worship. 570912, you have the three-prong requirement.
Thank you. Your time has expired. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Kennedy. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.